Today on The Grave Talks, Clear Communication, a conversation with Kelly McCarville. Doesn't everyone hear the dead? That's what a young Kelly McCarville wondered as she went about her life as a child. Day after day, she would sense, hear, sometimes even see the souls of those who no longer lived on this earth in the physical sense. These experiences were all viewed as normal because they were just that in the dynamics of her life. As she grew, these abilities only got stronger. Today, she uses them to help investigate and communicate messages from the grave to the living. This is her story on The Grave Talks.
You know, that's kind of an interesting question because I know a lot of people are able to tie it back to like a certain occurrence. Something happened and that's what sparked everything off for them. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's really not the case. So I am a psychic medium, but I am also a paranormal investigator. And I guess I don't even remember doing this, but I started dabbling in the weird before I can even remember. My mom shares stories with me about how I would talk to people who weren't there. And I had a, you know, quote, quote, imaginary baby that I knew where it was. And as a toddler, I'd set it down and hours later would go back to the same spot and pick it up. And I would know things before things happened. Like I'd walk into the house and I'd say, "Hey, mom, your best friend's about to call." And then the phone would ring. But I didn't realize I was doing those things when I was little. I just kind of assumed everybody knew things the way that I knew things. Mm-hmm. I think when the paranormal aspect of it kind of came into things was about the time that I was about 10 or 11 years old. We moved from this little bitty house that I lived in across town into a home that was built in 1937. So it wasn't like tremendously old, but it had multiple spirits that resided there. And so from the day that we moved in, we started having occurrences in the house. I was still really young. I had a bedtime and my mom would yell. It was the first time I had my own bedroom. I was so excited. I was upstairs away from them. It was so cool. But my mom kept yelling up the steps at me, "Kelly, get in bed. It's past your bedtime. You're supposed to be asleep." And I'm like, "I am in bed." And she, of course, didn't believe me because I was a kid and she could hear me up there walking around. And so one night she snuck upstairs as quiet as she could be, trying to catch me in the act. I was sound asleep. We would have things like that happen all the time where we would see things just, you know, out of the corner of our eye, or things would be moved around the house, or something would just fall off of a shelf for no reason right in front of us. It'd just fall off of a shelf and we'd been maybe sitting there watching a TV show. So it's not like somebody just walked into the room and rattled it off the shelf. We'd been sitting there doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So we started having all these little things happening. And I think that's when I started understanding that there was something besides us in the world and starting asking the questions and hearing my mom talk about ghosts. And it helped that I was raised by a parent who had a lot of interest and understanding in all of this. She has always been interested in the paranormal and in the metaphysical world, and she reads nonstop. So she had a lot of knowledge into all of this too. And, you know, so, and she indulged us a lot. So, you know, we would go out to scary locations and try to scare ourselves, and just, I guess all of that's kind of a typical story, but it was, you know, a long-winded answer, but it was probably about middle school, about that 10, 11, 12 years old, that I really started understanding there was more in the world than just us. Mm-hmm. And starting to understand what it was and how to communicate with all of it.
And it's very interesting. There's a lot to unpack there. And I want to kind of go back to some of the first things you talked about and then work forward. The imaginary baby that you had. Now, your mom told you about this. Do you yourself have memory of playing with the imaginary baby?
You know, I remember having an imaginary baby, but I don't remember thinking it's not real. And maybe that's how it is for all kids who have imaginary friends. Maybe they think they're real. Mm-hmm. But And I've wondered that a lot too myself. Is like, I look back to my childhood and I think, how many times did I see a spirit and I didn't realize that it was a spirit because I just assumed it was a real person because yeah. that's how I see them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know for sure if it registered with me that I was seeing something that other people couldn't, or if I really just assumed that I was making it up myself. But I remember playing with the baby.
So you, because my question is, you remember like physically seeing this baby? Because a lot of times when people have, you know, imaginary friends, they're just that. You don't see them. But
yeah.
for some people, when they have imaginary friends, they do see them. But sometimes the conversation is never had until much later in life where someone finally realizes, oh, you mean you don't see your imaginary friends too? And I'm wondering if that's kind of the case of what it was like for you.
And it's weird because even now, I mean, even knowing everything that I know and being more aware of my abilities and what I can do, sometimes I have to stop and make myself think about, okay, am I really seeing this thing with my eyes or am I seeing this thing in my head?
Uh-huh.
And because I've had that where I'll be out on an investigation and I'll see something and they'll like, so did you see it or did you just see it? And I have to stop and think about it. It's the weirdest thing.
Sure.
Because to me, it all registers the same. Whether I see it in my head or I see it with my eyes, I saw it. So...
Then you have
I don't know very honestly.
Yeah. It's just interesting because, you know, some will, especially if you saw it, but then everybody's like, I didn't see that. But it's plain as day to you because you have that ability. And that's why I find it interesting when we talk about imaginary friends and people having those experiences, is so many people have that thing where they saw it plain as day. And you know, they just thought that everyone was, you know, teasing them or whatnot because you're a little kid. And everything mm-hmm. to you at that point is normal, even if it is abnormal or paranormal or whatever you want to call it. So that's interesting.
And I almost have to say that I did see it, whether it be in my head or with my eyes, because mom would tell me like, we'd be leaving to go someplace and I'd set the baby down and I'd come back in the house. And if I didn't remember where I set it, I would look around and she could tell when I found it.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to have been able to see it one way or the other to go, oh, there's my baby, you know?
Sure.
So I was seeing it somehow.
And that's an interesting one to have, too, an imaginary baby.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not just like a friend, because a lot of times it will be, you know, a kid or something of a similar age. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that when you look back on this retrospectively of you had an imaginary baby?
I wonder if it's just... I've always been drawn to kids and I've noticed and have had other people comment about this actually, that something about me or my personality or my energy or something seems to draw in the children's spirits. So I don't know if it truly was a spirit baby, if somehow that was drawn to me because it could see me mm-hmm. or if it's just I liked babies at the time, but I know like when we go out to locations that have a number of spirits, it's not uncommon for the children to come find me.
That's interesting. Do you think that this was a spirit of a child that you in fact were playing with back then?
I would like to think maybe, but that kind of goes back to just, you know, If there is a baby spirit out there and it's just a baby that's looking for some comfort, I would like to think maybe I was able to give it some of that comfort, mm-hmm. but I don't remember it well enough to be able to say one way or the other for sure.
Yeah.
If I think it really was a spirit or not.
Sure. Now your mom, obviously she accepted this. She wasn't sitting there telling you, oh, this is, you know, it's in your head, go do something else. She was actually recognizing, no, I think my daughter actually is having these experiences.
And, oh, absolutely.
And really kind of helped you, you know, validated them. I mean, that's amazing. Was that validation coming from other places as well? Or was it more difficult to kind of talk about any of these things in your family, with friends, anything like that?
I'm not as young as I would like to think I am, but I'm old enough that when I first started figuring this all out, it still wasn't mainstream and it wasn't normal for people to have abilities. So when I first started talking to people, it was primarily like my mom or my good friends, but it wasn't something that I talked to everybody about.
Sure.
And when I did start sharing my abilities or even my interest in the paranormal, I kept it pretty, either people that I knew really well that I knew weren't going to judge me because of it, or oddly enough, complete strangers, people like I knew I'd never meet.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started doing readings for people, I did all online readings with people that I would never meet. And that way I could stay hidden away in the broom closet and pretend to be a normal person out there in society while being able to do what I felt like I was supposed to be doing. But sure. My mom was always super supportive, and my dad was in the picture, and he was pretty, he just went to work and said, yeah, okay, as long as you're happy. So he was pretty nonchalant about the whole thing one way or the other. But, you know, the thing about having the mom that I did, and the reason that was, I was as lucky in that area as I was, is you see the parents who are either, they'll tell the kid or the young person, stop making things up. That's not real. Don't tell stories. Or you'll find the other side of the parents who are like, oh my gosh, of course you're special. And like encourage the kids to a point that the kids feel like they need to make stuff up to keep the parents happy.
Sure.
And my mom was one of those happy mediums. She'd be like, okay, you think you have this. This is great. Let's talk about this. Why do you think you do? What has happened that makes you think this? Let's try things out. What works, what doesn't work. But she also helped me build that confidence up. You know, she presented situations for me to be able to do like cold readings for people. That was one of the games that we used to play when we'd be in the car driving someplace. She would tell me the first name of somebody that she knew that I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I would explain who that person was to her, what their personalities were like, things about their family, just things that I was told through my abilities that I obviously didn't have a reason to know because I didn't know that person. But it was a way for her to see, yeah, there really is something to this, but it was also a way for me to build up my confidence in what I could do. And she's not one of these people who would agree with me regardless. If I was wrong, she's like, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen that often.
Sure.
But when I missed, she'd be the first one to tell me, no, that's not right. So mm-hmm. she's not a fluffer. She'll tell me when I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So while other kids are playing roadside bingo, you were doing the readings of your friends.
Pretty much.
I love it.
And to me, that's a normal childhood. I didn't think anything of it. But yeah, to hear you say it that way, I guess that does make us a little weird. But I had fun.
I love it. So did your mom have abilities too? That is this the way that she seems to, you know, seem to understand and embrace this? A lot of times that's because, you know, someone in the family, either themselves or someone else close to them, maybe a mother, a sister, a grandmother,
yeah,
that she's seen this before and then recognized it in you.
Yeah. Well, I'm a strong believer that everybody is born with intuitive abilities. Everybody has a certain level of being able to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's nature and society that teaches us that we're not supposed to be able to see things, hear things, know things.
Mm-hmm.
But mom has always had a level of that intuition herself as well. And the more that she has helped me grow my abilities, it's grown her abilities and shown her all the times in her life that it's happened that she kind of brushed off as coincidence as well. So absolutely, it's there. We've seen a little bit of it in my sister and we've seen it in my kids too.
Mm-hmm. What is that like? I mean, tell me about what you've seen in your kids and how did you first kind of recognize some of that?
So my daughter is probably the one that I saw it first with, in just that she had, it was funny, we kid that she was born with this knowing look on her face. from the time that she was a little bitty baby, she would look at us like, you poor silly humans, don't you understand? I know so much more than you. And at 18, that hasn't gone away, sure. By the way. But now it's for an entirely different reason.
Yes.
But she has always had this energy that's drawn people to her. And she's always just had this empathetic energy where she knows when somebody's not feeling well or not happy. And she'd just walk up and like random strangers on the street, she'd walk up and give them a hug. And they're like, oh my God, thank you. I needed that right now. You know, mm-hmm. The one that's talked to me probably about it the most, so is one of my sons. We were watching a show about another fairly popular medium, and she was just kind of answering questions. And he's came out and sat down on the couch with me for a little bit. And he knows what I can do. I don't hide it from my kids. I explain to them that, you know, it's maybe not something you want to walk around school telling everybody because they'll think your mom and you are crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't hide from them what I do because it's who I am. So he came out and he sat down and he watched a little bit of the show with me. He says, Mom, can everybody hear dead people? And I answered him honestly. I said, well, not everybody can, but there are other people out there who can hear people like I do, like this person on the TV can. Mm-hmm. And there's people who sometimes do it without meaning to, and some people who can and have turned it off. And I said, why do you ask? He's no reason. And I'm like, dang it. Because he's always been my one that I can tell he senses when there's something around. When I'm feeling something, he's feeling something.
Uh-huh.
So he sat there for another minute and he listens to a few more questions and he says, does it make you weird if you can hear dead people? And I said, well, you know, in some people's eyes, yeah, that makes you a little bit weird. But in my opinion, no, it doesn't make you weird. It makes you maybe special even.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an ability that certain people have that other people maybe don't. It's like playing the piano. I can't play the piano, but grandma can. So it's an ability. Why do you ask? No reason. So he sat there for another minute. He says, sometimes I hear people who aren't there. Now, as a mom, and I was raised by my mom, so I'm like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, but let's make sure this isn't just a mental disability.
Exactly.
You know, we want to make sure he's not just crazy and hearing voices. And I'm like, so what do they say to you? He says, well, most of the time I can't understand it, but every once in a while, it's a few words here and there that I can understand. And I said, do you ever hear anybody that you recognize their voice? And he says, yeah, sometimes I hear Big Granny. Big Granny is what they called my grandma. Okay. For whatever reason, great grandma turned into Big Granny, and it's a title that stuck.
I like it.
So he told me that every once in a while he can hear Big Granny and he recognizes her voice and that she's just saying hi and love you and that it was nothing bad ever. And mm-hmm. That was kind of the end of the conversation. He's quite a bit older now and he tells me on occasion that he can still hear people. He's gone on a few investigations with us and he'll tell me, he'll come up and he'll say, okay, I'm having somebody who sounds to be about this old and this is what they're saying to me. Who would that be?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll help him figure out who that spirit is, you know? So he's acknowledging it, but I don't know that he really talks about it a ton yet to people.
That's so interesting. And it's got to be interesting for you as a mom to see these abilities kind of develop and them trying to figure out, you know, how to navigate all of that.
Yeah. And I try to make sure that they understand that you can embrace it if you want to, or I can teach you how to control it if you want to, because I don't want them to feel like just because it's something that I can do that they have to.
Sure.
You know, but I also don't want to tell them that they shouldn't figure it out if they want to. So they're still, in the grand scheme of things, they're still pretty young and they're figuring out who they are. So they know they can come to me with any questions. And in the meantime, they get to see mom out there doing weird things and going to crazy abandoned buildings and doing all sorts of crazy things. So
let's talk about that house that you moved into when you were young and you realized there's multiple spirits here. I mean, tell me about that. Tell me about the beginning of that. When you first got there, did you know immediately that there was something else in the house besides you and your family?
It really didn't take us very long to recognize that there was something else there. And not just from the, I mean, the walking up in the upstairs bedrooms, that started almost day one. But there was also like a creepy feeling when you walked by the, you had to walk through the dining room and there was a little hallway that went down to the bathroom. And that area just always had the creepiest feeling. And it was, I don't even know how much longer after we'd moved into this house, but we'd mentioned it a little bit that the dining room kind of creeped us out. And so finally we sat down one day, me and my mom and my sister, and we said, let's make notes. What do we feel? You know, what does it feel, male or female? How old does it feel? What feelings do you get when you walk by there? And we wrote it all down and we all were having the same feelings. We all were getting the same impressions that it was a male probably in about his 50s. And that there was a lot of just anxiety and confusion about why we were there. So we knew that there were things there. The activity actually increased then after the gentleman that we bought the home from, he loved that house. And even after we bought it from him, he would come over and knock on the door to visit the house. You know, he would say he was coming to visit us, but he wanted to see the house, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But after he passed away, we started having extra activity at the house. So we know it was him. There was a school teacher then that lived in the upstairs, and we didn't realize that at first. We just knew that there was a female spirit that was up in my bedroom, that felt older, fairly proper. And like she monitored me a lot, like watched what I was doing and kind of, didn't always approve when I was being a kid. And come to find out, they had rented out the upstairs and that was her area. That's why I had an alcove off to the side of my bedroom that had a sink in it. And we never figured out why until we asked. That upstairs had been rented out. That was like her kitchen area. She was an English teacher, so she corrected grammar. You know, I was a school age kid, so of course she would monitor me. It was the weirdest thing. It's like, okay, this all makes sense now of what it was we were feeling, but it wasn't ever really scary. It would get uncomfortable sometimes because things would happen that we didn't have an explanation for, but it was never, they weren't ever trying to scare us. It wasn't ever a situation where we ever felt like we were in danger. If anything, it was almost comical because we would be sitting watching TV or something and we were like, man, we haven't heard from the ghost for a while, and something would be pushed off the shelf. Or the ghost has been really quiet lately and you'd hear this big thump from upstairs. You know, it's like, okay, you're still here. Good to know. So
sure.
It was little things. It was like, I've always described it as having roommates that you can't see.
Okay. And your family, I mean, you were having these experiences. I'm assuming were these things that were beyond just your psychic ability or your,
oh, yeah,
your sensory ability? These are things everyone else in the house was experiencing as well?
Oh, yeah, because these were audible sounds, things mm-hmm. you could hear with your ears. Anybody could hear them. Things would move and disappear and then show up months later. Even my dad worked a lot, and he of the entire family was probably the one who was most, I guess, nonchalant about the whole thing, just kind of, maybe. But we lived there long enough that even he finally got to the point and he's like, yeah, there's something here. So, there was no way to hide the fact, even when there were people over, if we're all sitting downstairs in the family room and we hear walking upstairs, you can't hide that, mm-hmm. you know? And the big thumps and the animals that would growl or hiss at something that we couldn't see. So, you know, we kind of, when we had other people over, just tried to brush it off. And it's like, oh, they're just being weird, or
yeah.
Don't know what that was. But yeah, it was absolutely something that everybody who lived in the house experienced, or spent any time in the house, they'd experience something.
Was there anything there that caused any sort of fear for you, or was this all just kind of, you know, normal? It's there, not necessarily threatening. It's just cohabitating with the dead.
I wasn't scared very often, but it did make you, it was enough that on occasion you were uncomfortable. Now, some of that I would brush off too. I was young, you know, I was 10, 11 years old when we first moved in, and walking through the dark house all by myself, there's an uneasy feeling in the dining room. I didn't take my time going through there. It was always fast and I'd never look into the hallway. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I would say I was scared. There were times that I was uncomfortable, and but I can get uncomfortable too if I'm in a room with somebody that I like, a human fleshy person.
Sure.
And they're just watching me. Mm-hmm. That can make me uncomfortable too and give me that same sort of creepy feeling, like, just stop watching me, you know. We've kind of come up with an explanation, we think, of why we had some of the feelings that we did, and that's helped calm down the feelings. So this just adds the creep factor, and I'm not trying to add a creep factor, but it's factual.
Sure.
The guy that we bought our house from was the funeral director for one of the two big funeral homes in town. So what we found out is that this hallway that I keep talking about, just off the dining room, he had a phone in that hallway, and he'd get calls in the middle of the night all the time of, so-and-so's passed away, you need to come and get them, you know? And he put the phone outside of his bedroom so he didn't bother his wife when the phone would ring, because he'd have to get details, he'd have to get dressed. Mm-hmm. He was trying to be as non-disruptive as possible. But you have to think about those phone calls, you know? Here he is, knowing that he's answering the phone to take a call from somebody who's distraught, to go into a situation that has a high energy going on with it. There's a death. There's potentially a new spirit involved. And it was a little town. So a lot of times he had to have known the person that he was getting called for. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that can create a lot of energy and leave a lot of residual energy behind. And we think that that's kind of what we were feeling as we walked through that area of the dining room by the hallway, is all the emotions, all the energy, all the phone calls of him answering those calls after somebody had passed away.
The trauma. Yeah. I mean, the trauma of it. I mean, it's a small town. You're going to know everyone.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in that sort of a position, you kind of get intimately close and know these families as they kind of come and go with their other loved ones.
Absolutely.
And then. And that is, I mean, it's like tiny trauma after tiny trauma of, oh gosh, so-and-so died. Oh gosh. And, mm-hmm. and it's not like a once a year or once every so long thing. It's your business.
Every couple days. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, every couple days he was getting a phone call. And if it wasn't like a doctor that was calling him, it was maybe the family directly. And you have to think of the energy of the person that was on the other side of that phone then that was talking to him, you know? And we don't know for sure that that's what we were feeling. But now looking back, knowing what we know, being more familiar with spirits and how they feel and how they haunt a house. That sounds crazy, but true.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense now to think about the feelings that we had there when we first moved in.
And I want to talk more about how you sense them and some things about that, but this just kind of came up in my mind as we're talking about this. And when you talk about haunted objects or objects that mm-hmm. hold energy and things of that nature, this is one I've never really, I guess, you know, thought much of, but in reality, a phone. I mean, we use them for so many things, and going all the way back to when it was, you know, your rotary phones or dial-up phones in your house. I mean, today, I mean, phones are even much more than that. And the amount of energy that we are holding in our hands and what we read on these things and what we say through these things, phones. I mean, that's an interesting object that I've never really heard anyone talk about as being haunted. But I mean, would that not be like your prime, you know, a used cell phone that, you know, just like went through someone's life and it's like, well, they just got divorced and they had all these deaths in their family and this or that and all this trauma and all of these, so many of those messages communicated through this device that's so close to them. it's an interesting thought that that may be a very I don't know, an object of interest or yeah. pulling something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I could definitely see that. I mean, I've got kind of a mixed opinion on haunted objects, just
yeah.
to begin with, because I know everybody's like, oh, the spirit is attached to this object. This object is haunted. And I'm like, well, maybe, but it's still a spirit doing the haunting. You take the spirit away from the object and the object's still just an object.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I could see potentially that a phone could be haunted, but that person would have had to have put that emotional connection to their phone mm-hmm. to have then the phone be haunted. That's why typically the things that you see as a haunted object is like an heirloom or something that was given to them that means something, or a doll because they were connected to it, or, you know, but yeah. again, you the object itself isn't, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, mm-hmm. the object itself is not haunted. It's just the spirit likes to be around that object. Therefore, wherever that object is, so is the spirit.
Well,
down the road, we're going to have haunted phones because it's the day that we live in.
Well, and what I wonder about with haunted objects is so much not necessarily that there's a spirit attached to it or that there's something conscious there, but more so just our own energy. Because this whole idea of us haunting ourselves is kind of what I'm getting at with mm-hmm. our own energy, where because we've expelled so much energy, why do, you know, if that energy is on that object, why do we have to wait till we're dead for suddenly that object to be active with our energy?
We absolutely don't.
Exactly. And that's where I'm wondering where, you know, if there's any object that all of us are more close to than anything else, it's that phone. And that's where I wonder, you know, how often, you know, can all of that condensed energy onto one thing end up kind of being a catalyst for, you know, just strange things happening, and not necessarily here's a being or an entity that's showing up, but just, you know, it's, you know, like a magnet or whatever, you know, where it's just this energy that's there and it may interact in ways that we don't expect with our environments.
And I think there's so much truth to that, but we forget how much of an energy imprint we can leave on things even now. I mean, think about if you've ever walked into a room after people have been in there fighting, there's an energy in that room.
Yes.
Because that energy of that fight has lingered and it's like an ick floating around in the air, you know? So yeah. And it is crazy because if you know, thinking about the cell phone, I can leave the house and forget a million things. But if I forget my cell phone, I feel it half a block away. I'm like, oh God, I don't have my phone.
It's dread. You know? Yeah.
And it isn't just that, oh, I forgot it. It's like, I feel like I forgot a piece of me at home.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Kelly. In part two, do spirits know who can sense and hear them? Are there devices that spirits prefer to use to communicate with us over others? How was Kelly able to identify and get to know the history of the spirits in her childhood home? And how did Kelly, as an adult, eventually take her ability beyond just her family and friends? I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to The Grave Talks.